Seminar, Agelessness, Lecture 22. Agelessness is spiritually whole. Being in the sense of allness, being in the awareness of now, being unconditional love, complete, spiritually whole, self-magic. That should be quite interesting. I wonder what's going to come out of this. Agelessness is spiritually whole. When we live an ageless life, we live a spiritually whole life, because there's no past, no present, no future. There's only the now. What does now mean? Now means now. Now means not past, not future, not present, not anything. It means just now. And that is complete. You see, past, present, future are all incomplete. They're incomplete because they're not in the present tense, in the right now. When we have people do their lessons for the Art and Science of Wholeness, we start them out and we say, please write everything in the first person present tense positive. First person present tense positive. Then, the great difficulty, the great challenge, or the great experience that I had, was in working with our proctors, our people on campus, to figure out what it means, first person present tense positive. Because they had a very great time with that, because they were trying to say that these things are first person present tense positive, and those things are first person present tense positive, and they were saying all sorts of things were first person present tense positive, and none of them were. Why were none of these things they mentioned first person present tense positive? Anyone got the answer? Even if you know it, you can say it.
Because they were not in the now.
They were not in the now. They were relative to another aspect of time and space. They were not in the now. So, to get them into the now, in speaking about first person present tense positive, it was necessary for me to say to them that if you cannot conceive of it in this instant being true, then it is not so. Now, we received an email from one of our students, or friends, and he's been enjoying our thoughts for the day and all these other things. And he said he enjoyed the idea that death could be conceived of as a journey. We were making a journey, and in making that journey, we appeared to be not present. We appeared to be not here. And because we appeared to be not here, we appeared to be dead. And to be dead meant that you're not alive. But there's always life in every cell. There's always life in every being. Whether you are here or not here, you're still alive. If you are in a different embodiment, if you're on a different level of dimension of consciousness, you're still alive. You cannot die. You cannot kill matter. Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. So life can neither be created nor destroyed. Can you imagine destroying life? When you destroy life, you're destroying the essence of all. And you can't do that, because the essence of all is life. And we are really the essence of all life, but we have not claimed that. And we have said, well, surely we can't be all of God. And as long as we keep saying we can't be all of God, we can't be all of God for us. And that means we're not living in the first person, present tense, positive. We're not living in the now. When we start living in the now, we say, I am God. God I am. I am light. I am love. I am peace. You see, the I am period, that's God. The I am is now. It's a perfect representation of the concept of now. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect, constant. Oh, I just happened to wake up this moment, this very moment now, why Lydia thinks this is so nice. This came from Australia. Ach, yeah, my goodness sake. NVIDIA is this came out of Australia. But the wall was from New Zealand, but it came out of Australia. And so, you see, in the now, as I was telling you this just now, I visualized me in the store in Australia, in Sydney, picking up this jacket and thinking to myself, what a lovely jacket. And the price was right, too. A good quality, beautiful in every way. And I was thinking I should have bought 3 or 4. Of course, if I had bought a dozen, I would have sold them the minute I came home. But everywhere I went, people said, where's it? Just that. I love one of those, just like that. Perfect, you know. And, of course, they're right. It is a nice jacket sweater, sleeveless. So, just for those who don't have their video turned on. One day we'll have this on video too, you know. That'll be kind of fun. Agelessness is spiritually whole, living in the now. Agelessness is spiritually whole, living in the now. How do we live in the now agelessly and be spiritually whole? Well, every word we speak is what now? Can you tell me? We've given you the clue. We've given you... Say it.
In the now.
Every word we speak is what?
Now.
I am, and so it is.
Yeah.
I am whole. I am perfect. I am here. I am whatever. You see, that is the now talk.
Yeah.
And have you ever heard of a universe more now-oriented than ours? But everyone says, I am. You know? Everybody, no matter what the language is, they're all saying, I am. And when they're saying, I am, what are they doing?
They know that they're
They're talking in the first person, present tense, now, and they know what?
That they're the only person in the universe.
That too. They know they're the only person in the universe. They know they're the creator of their universe. They know that this is where they are. This is being spiritually whole. There's no comparison. There's no otherness. Spiritually whole is the now. I am is the now. So, if you will make every word that you speak predicated upon I am, you're in the now. Now you wondered, I thought that was going to be difficult. That doesn't sound too difficult. Well, it is very difficult. Because you, each one, are sick cows. You, each one, go around saying, I am God, but so are you. Well, who is this so are you that we're talking about, you know? I am God, but so are you. Well, that means we don't really believe that we're God. That means that we think that everything is God, and that we have to confirm and conform that everything is God, and so we say, I am God, but so are you. You cannot do that. If we do that, and we all do that, we all say that because we want to be, you know,
humble.
Humble, yeah, that's the word. We want to be humble about it, and there's nothing humble about it. Sylvia, who are you? And I mean your personal name.
Sylvia.
Oh, come on now. I am Sylvia Enns.
Oh,
I'm Sylvia Maria Enns. Who are you? You are that name. I am Sylvia Maria Enns. I am not Lydia. I am not Gertrude. You see, I am Sylvia, and not only Sylvia, I am Sylvia Maria Enns. You know, she's the whole ball of wax. Now, do you have trouble saying that?
No.
But see, Sylvia doesn't say, I am Sylvia Maria Enns, and so are you. We would laugh at her. We would think that she's a little farouk, you know. But somehow she didn't get her marbles on straight that morning. But you see, I am God, but so are you. You know, I'm whole and perfect, but so are you. I create you that way. No, you don't. If you think you create them whole and perfect, then you think that they weren't whole and perfect, and that you had to create them whole and perfect. You follow that? You have to be so careful with the subtleties of words and the subtleties of these ideas, because they can be real killers. They can really mess you up. And they can show you that you're on another track, on another passage to India, you know? And you'll not get there very well. You'll not get there very well. Yes, ho ho. What we want to do, we want to wake up to the reality of who we are. Now, you are DRZ. Dorothea Ruth, I can't do the R's like Ellen, I don't want to. Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. Now, what's this Ruth about? And what's this Zimmerman about? What's this Dorothea about? That is your latchkey. That is your key to the now. I am Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. When you say that, you're saying who you are. You're saying that you're living in the now. You're saying that you're being in the now. You're saying that you're the all of the now. You're not saying, I'm going to be Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. Well, what are you going to call the new baby? Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. Well, when are you going to call it that? It's already, you know, it's a baby. We're having a baby and we're calling it Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. Well, what if it turns out to be a boy? It'll be Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. what if it turns out to be a boy? Well, say it'll be. We'll still say the DRZ, and we'll say Donald Ralph Zimmerman, or something of that nature. But you see, Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman, one of a kind. There may be a bunch of them in the telephone book, and I'm sure they're not. There may be a bunch in the telephone book, but there's only one Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman, and that's this one that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the truth?
Yes.
Yes. And is Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman the most fabulous, beautiful, fulfilled essence in the universe?
Oh, yes.
Is Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman ageless and spiritually whole?
Oh, my, yes.
How old is Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman?
25.
No. Ageless.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the 25 is the game we were playing before. You see, but this week, we're playing the ageless game.
Yeah.
We're playing, and which is a much better game. When people come to you, Dorothea, and they say, Madame, how old are you? Ageless. Well, I want to be able to write down the number. I've got to put the number down in your license. Like, put ageless. But I cannot put ageless because ageless is not a number. That you got the point there, buddy. Ageless is not a number. I don't have a number behind you. But woman, don't you understand? We have to have this on your driver's license so that the world can look at you and say, you are this age. And you say to them, here's an extra $1,000, put down ageless. He says, okay. And so he puts ageless down. Wouldn't that be something if all the driver's licenses in the world said ageless? Yes? That'd be fantastic, you know? And is that true? Yes, it's true!
Oh,
my gosh, you go like this. Yeah. It's true. It would be fantastic if everyone on earth were ageless. Do you know what?
That's it.
It is. And everyone on earth is ageless. And you know what that means when they're ageless? Hey, come on now. They're spiritually whole. Their allness, their now, awareness of their now, their unconditional love complete, their spiritually whole self magic. Now, what do you want? What do you want? Let's all play the game. And let's play the game with enthusiasm, with joy, with awareness. And as we play the game, watch the magic come forth. Yeah? Watch the magic. We got to watch those shoulders. Yeah, no. You and Sylvia are a lot of time. You don't do that. That means, I don't care. Not important to me. And so, be careful. I mean, I got eyes in the back of my head. You know that. Yeah. You know, the clay sticks through. But it works. I'm ageless. You're ageless. We're all ageless. And we are all total, spiritually, wonderfully revealed, fulfilled, dynamic beings. Now, these are words that we can say, and they don't mean too much because we don't understand them, but we can say them. And I tell you, Don't kid yourself. I tell you again, don't kid yourself. Now say it again so I can think of what I'm going to say next. No, I know what I'm going to say next. Don't kid yourself. When you say 2 times 2 is 4, you don't have to know what it means, but you will use it. When you say, I am Sylvia Maria Jones, be careful, because that's not who she is it?
No.
Who is she?
Sylvia Maria Jones.
And as Sylvia Maria ends, does she have any dignity? Does she have any personality? Does she have any uniqueness?
Yes.
Yes, she does. Now, that uniqueness that she has is always hers, isn't it?
Right, yes.
And that uniqueness that she has turns her up. Now, if I ask Sylvia Maria Jones, where are you? She's not here today. She never was here, really. But she's not here today. Where am I going to find Sylvia Maria Jones? Maybe in the telephone book, huh? But will I find it in her?
No.
Oh, Lydia. Lydia. And Sylvia Maria ends, looks at me and says, are you talking to me? And I said, if you're not Lydia, don't answer. You know? Don't say, are you talking to me? Now, I've done this with a number of you. I would be looking at Gertrude. I'd say, now, Dorothea? And Gertrude would be answering me because I'm looking at her. Don't fall in the trap. The world oftentimes tries to intimidate you to fall in the trap and say that you are not who you are. Now, Gertrude, are you Mrs. Suter?
Yes.
And are you Mrs. Metzliger? What was the name? Metzger?
Metzler.
Are you Mrs. Metzler?
Metzler. No.
No. And why are you not Mrs. Metzler?
I'll say.
Because that's not who you are,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And who are you? Mrs. Suter. Now, do you have any trouble with that? If someone in the crowd would call, oh, Mrs. Suter, every Mrs. Suter would look over there to see to whom they're speaking, you know. No, you with the blue shirt on, you with the blue blouse, you know, you, Mrs. Suter. You see, we all have little identifying activities about us which show who we are. Now, let our identifying activity be something like this, being spiritually whole. How could you outwardly demonstrate or show that you're spiritually whole? Ellen, how could you outwardly demonstrate that you're spiritually whole?
By being myself and having fun and living in the now and being always positive.
You could show you're spiritually whole by living in the now, always being positive, being yourself and having fun and all these things. You think that would show that you are who you are, mm-hmm. that you're spiritually whole? What do those things have to do with spiritual and wholeness?
Well, it would outwardly show them how I express myself when I'm myself and have fun and I'm always happy and harmonious with my world and have a positive attitude about myself and my creation.
Let's ask a question now. How would a little baby show that he's spiritually whole? He doesn't even know what the words mean, you know. But how would a little baby show that he is spiritually whole?
Peaceful and happy.
Spontaneous.
What?
Spontaneous.
Yeah, spontaneous, but how would he show it spontaneously?
By being...
What?
Yeah.
What?
Kissing, smiling, laughing.
Yes,
playful and happy.
Playful and happy.
What you're saying is that a child would demonstrate its spiritual wholeness by being content with itself.
Yeah.
By liking itself.
Yeah.
By liking itself, being happy, whatever it's doing, you know, chewing on its toe or whatever, you know.
Being balanced,
that's a good word for it too. But now, are these things that it's doing to show other people that it is what it is?
No.
Or as you, who said spontaneous? You. Well now, was it a spontaneous act?
Yes.
The child is spontaneously doing these things because it's nature to do it, because it's spiritually whole.
Yeah.
Okay, Miss Lydia, if you're saying that's a spontaneous act of that child, what would it be in an adult?
The same thing.
So, you see, the same whatever. If you can go to something simple like a child and find a solution, bring it over. Bring it over to your mature self and see how it works. Now, if you were not laying in your crib, but if you were doing whatever you're doing and you're content and you're peaceful and you're harmonious and you are enjoying yourself and all of the things that we've been talking about here, if you're doing that, what's the world going to think about you? Are they going to think, not necessarily the words, you're spiritually whole?
Special.
Don't jump me before I'm done. They're not going to think you're spiritually whole because they don't know that term.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to think you are one very special person, one very contented person, one untouched person by the world in which you live. Your life must be just a series of happy events, right?
Right.
Now, if your life is a series of happy events and that's how you act, good. If your life is not a series of happy events and that's how you act, better. You following? When you can act in that harmonious, liking yourself attitude, peaceful attitude, peace of mind, when you're facing many difficulties in your life, then you're showing your spiritual wholeness, your spiritual wellness, your spiritual allness. It's fantastic. But this is something that you do for yourself. It's something that you claim for yourself. This is your agelessness. The child is ageless, yes? I mean, how can you put an age on a child? You say it's months or weeks old, but that's not the point. If, when the child has this contentment in it, this peace, this delight in its own self, wow, you know, it's spiritually whole. It's spiritually illumined. It's fantastic. And then that may change to be less that way as time goes on, because the child is worried with things that adults want to worry him about. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could have that contentment the child has? And wouldn't it be great if we could keep that contentment in our adult life?
Mm-hmm.
And we can. We can keep that contentment. We can keep that agelessness, that peaceful beingness by paying attention here instead of here.
Mm-hmm.
Let that nose job alone. Pay attention to your own self, your own heart, your own being, your own awareness, you see? And when you pay attention to yourself, what happens?
You live in the now.
That's the best answer. You're living in the now. I was going to say a few other things, but that sums it all up. You're living in the now. You're living in the now, and you're being yourself in the now, and you're experiencing all that you, so to speak, have chosen to come on this planet Earth to experience. How much more of your divine self could you experience than that bliss of a child? How much more? Now, some children happily grow up without losing it. Not too many, but some grow up without losing it. And when they grow up without losing it, they're not afraid somebody's going to steal their toys. They're not afraid that someone's going to take the rights away from them. They're not afraid that they're not going to get enough to eat. I work with Rex, my dog, as often as possible in the presence of other dogs. And I feed him cookies in the presence of other dogs, and I feed the other dogs first. Because I don't want him to feel that he's ever going to be missing anything. I want him to feel his good is always there. His gift is always there. And I'll even take his gift away from him while he's eating it. I'll take it away and say, can I have that? And he looks at me and smiles. He says, I know you're not going to eat it, but what do you got in mind? And so I hold it for a moment, and then I say, well, thank you for sharing it. And I give it back to him, and he just enjoys it. Not because he is afraid it's not going to come back. But well, in the morning, when I give him breakfast, I put breakfast in his bowl for him, and I set it on the floor. And he comes over, and he looks at the breakfast, and then he says, first things first, he says, I want my morning hug. Well, he's already had three or four of them, but he wants his morning before breakfast hug, you know. He always gets a hug right before he eats his food. And I give him a big surrounding hug. And he stands there when I'm done. He says, don't quit. And then he sticks his head between my legs. He says, now give me a body rub too. But you see, his contentment, right before he eats his breakfast even, and you know, he's usually wants his food and enjoys it thoroughly, but he has so content about himself, he likes himself so much. The only meal that I have just a little difficulty with is supper. Because at supper time I put some oil on his food, and he loves that oil, olive oil. And when he sees me bringing that, he's ready for that bowl. He's ready for that with all his heart and soul. He'll let me rub him while he's eating it, but he wants to get his nose in there and clean up that bowl. But you see, this is a contentment too. This is a childlike contentment, a childlike bliss, a childlike, what are we saying here, spiritually whole. And it's fantastic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. Being in the sense of allness. Are we being in the sense of allness? Are we aware of the sense of allness? Are you aware of the sense of allness and what it means to you? What does allness mean to us in our agelessly being spiritually whole? What does it mean to us? It means one thing. It means we are peace. We are peace. I know this Eric Lieberman, who wrote the book Peace of Mind way back in the 30s. Beautiful book. I read it because my mother had read it, and it was a very interesting book. But it talked about peace of mind instead of demonstrating peace of mind. And as I read the book, I thought to myself, why doesn't he demonstrate it? Why doesn't he show, instead of saying, when you do this, you have peace of mind. When you do that, you have peace of mind. And those people have peace of mind. And these people, you know, instead of saying, I delight in peace of mind. I let my mind be empty of all thoughts. I let my mind be empty of all thoughts concerning others and how others should live and how others should act and how others should be. And I let my mind dwell just on me alone. And as I let my mind dwell on me, my mind falls into the pattern of saying, pretty nice guy. Pretty nice guy here. That's a nice warm heart. I enjoy being in that warm heart, you know. And this guy's got some good thoughts. He's thinking some happy thoughts about himself, about his world, about who he is, about what he's doing, not about other people. This guy doesn't even know about other people, apparently, but he doesn't think about other people. He only thinks about himself. And you say, well, what selfishness and what dumbness? Well, from the way we have been told and trained, that is the way you think. But that's not the truth. I use these references facetiously because I try to say facetiously because people say, oh, I'm a Christian, or I'm a Christian, I believe this, and I'm a Christian, I believe that. Well, what did Jesus say? What did Jesus say? He says, love your neighbor like yourself. He said, first you have to love yourself, which is what you're going to do anyhow. And then you love your world. But first you love yourself. And society wants to teach us that we should love our neighbors first and help our neighbors first before we help ourselves. In fact, this is traditions in many countries where the children go away, like in Mexico. My goodness, these people leave Mexico and come up to the United States to work, and they earn minimum wage, and yet they can send home two-thirds to three-quarters of their money that they earn to their family back home, for whom that amount of money is like a month's wages, just for that one day's salary. It's amazing. It's amazing. But that's the way they've been trained. So, of the Mexicans who have come to the United States, how many of them have done something significant with their life? Now, just let that alone for a minute. Now, of the Koreans and the Asian people who've come to the United States, how many of them have done something significant with their life? And there you'd have to say almost all of them.
Yes.
Obviously not all of them, but almost all of them. Because they start their own businesses.
Yeah.
They start their families in their business. They make something of themselves. They send their children to school so that they will be college bred. They send their children to college so that they will be outstanding, so that they will be leaders, because they have the mentality for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Mexicans have the same mentality, but their mentality, unfortunately, on another level, is that they're not worth anything. Is that they're only worth menial labor, you know? And the same goes for, well, isn't that interesting? The same goes for the Cubans, you know? Those coming over from Cuba and those lands. Many of them, the majority of them, are just day laborers too. They come over to be just orange pickers and cotton pickers and stuff. And that's great, but you see, they never had the opportunity to have the concept drilled into them, or maybe unearthed from within them, of that they're worthwhile. They are valuable people. They are beautiful people. They are God. They are spiritual masters. They don't perhaps say it in just those terms. But they are. The Koreans and the Chinese, the Asians that come over here, they all seek to improve themselves tremendously. They work as a family to improve themselves, and they all improve themselves. They send everyone who can possibly go to college. And they are very good students. Excellent. Now, you take the Germans, and you take the Russians, you take the Swiss, you take the whomever over there in the European nations, and they come over here. That's true, they were the founding fathers of the United States. But what did they do? They did like the Koreans did and the Asians did. They formed communities. But in their community, they didn't aspire to any greatness. It's just when they got out of the community, they aspired to greatness. But in their community, they were nothing. They worked hard, but they did not aspire to greatness. They did not aspire, let's not use this in the improper method, they did not aspire to college. They aspired only to menial level of labor. You follow me? And because they didn't aspire to their genius, to their educational potential, they were not leaders in the world because of that. Now, a few were. Obviously, there's going to be a few who are going to go and do their thing regardless. But what do they usually do when they go and do their thing? They leave their family. They leave their family behind because the family doesn't help them. The family says, you give most of your money here, you know, you do this. But they leave, and then they put themselves through school, and they put themselves through relationships, and they put themselves through life in a positive, dynamic way, and they pull themselves up by the bootstrings, as the saying goes. But the thing is, they believe in themselves. Now, the Koreans and the Chinese, they are very family-oriented thing, and they support their people in accomplishing great things. Whereas the Europeans, they had a tendency to stay tribal. Isn't that interesting? You think the Koreans and the And Asian might be more tribal, but they're not. Because they're strugglers. They have come through very difficult times to arrive at very good times. And in Western Europe, or that is in Europe, the people there, the people who came from Europe were the good-for-nothings. They were the people who couldn't make it there, just like the people who went to Australia. They were the criminals. They were sent there and told to start their life over again. Now, in any group, there's going to be leaders, and those leaders will take over and be good. And such has been proven in Australia, the outstanding leadership that has evolved there. But in Europe, those who couldn't make it emigrated to America, and they came to America, and some of them made good, but only when they separated from their families. Only when they separate. Even the Jewish mama who says, "My son's a doctor, my son's a lawyer," you know, which is terrific. She really didn't help her son become the doctor or the lawyer. Because she was always saying, we have nothing, there's nothing that we have, you know, we're so poor. And they weren't poor. They were good. But you see, these images that we build up is so unfortunate. Now I'm talking back in the 30s and 40s, I'm not talking today. Today, that may still be the truth, but I doubt it. Today, individuality in America has sprung forth very beautifully. And individuality has come up in a marvelous way. Now, how has it come up in your countries? How has it come up in Switzerland? Is there individuality? Well, Switzerland is waking up to the fact that it's stupid to spend all the money they do on their military machine, which doesn't produce any benefit, because nobody's going to go ahead and try to take Switzerland. Nobody wants it.
No.
Switzerland has a mental consciousness that it is immune. And is it?
Yes.
Does anybody want Switzerland?
No.
All the countries in the world, even Hitler, did he want Switzerland? No. He used it for a recreation spot. You know, because Switzerland didn't care whether he was there or not. Blip, 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 blip. How about that? You know? Sort of an immunity to dictators. But that's interesting too. Now, you see, when you are spiritually illumined, when you are spiritually awake, when you're spiritually alive, you are untouched by the world around you. You are living a total life that is immune to all of the things that would limit you. And this is what each of us choose to do. I would recommend that each of us be a baby. Not the whimpering baby. The little baby says, coo, 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 yeah. Because that's the baby that's content. That's the consciousness that's content. And I would imagine, I don't know, I'm sure they've done research on this, but I would imagine every out of a million babies, wouldn't that be a great test? Out of a million babies, I would say that maybe 999,000 of those babies were not the coo babies. Maybe just 100,000 were coo babies. And the coo babies are the leaders. They are the people who run the country. They're the people who are content. They're the people who are at peace with themselves. They're the people who are the wealthy ones. You know, they're the Bill Gateses. They're the people who just know exactly what they're doing and how they're doing it. Interesting in them.
Very interesting, because I am a coo baby.
Oh, you're a coo baby. My sister tells me I was a coo baby. She tells me I'm just like the baby that Irene has, her son, and right now. And it's fascinating. But you see, these are things that we're working on. These are things that are important to us. These are things that we need to understand for ourselves. Okay, let's move along here. Being in the awareness of now. Agelessness is being in the awareness of now. We've talked about that. How do you be in the awareness of now? How do you live in the awareness of now? Anyone got a suggestion? We spoke about it before.
It just speak and do everything in the now. Be focused in the now.
How soon we forget. What was the
ageless.
What was the term that I used about being in the now?
Spiritually whole.
What?
Spiritually whole.
These are all good words.
Agelessness,
perfect.
First person present tense.
What is the first person present tense?
Now.
Huh?
I am.
I am. Yes. What happened to I am?
It's still here.
That's the essence. That's the essence that we're looking for. First person tense. I am. I am peace. What do we say?
I am rich.
We say, om, 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 om. I like me.
I am peace. I am divine order.
Yes.
Now.
I like me. I am divine order. I am peace. Okay, now. That three sentences, those three sentences, that statement, is so powerful that if we said nothing else in our entire life except have that on our lips, in our heart, in our being, all of our life, we would be the most contented, peaceful, successful, healthy people on the face of the earth. Really, that's all it takes. And we'd be ageless because we'd have no worries. We would be ageless because we have nothing to concern us. We would be peace. We'd be love. We'd be magnificent. Now, with your brilliance, Ingeborg, what made you come up with the answer to our question? I listened within. What made you come up with the answer to our question?
I listened within.
Super. And that's true. You listened within, didn't you?
Yes.
Did you hear it outwardly? No, nobody was saying it. And I was pulling for it in so many ways. But that's what it's all about. I am. Now, there are many I am movements that get started, but what's wrong with the I am movements that get started? Simple.
They have just the name.
I'm sorry?
They have just the
name. No. What is, I'm not concerned about it. What is it that gets in the way of these movements, of I am movements?
No application.
Huh?
No application.
No efficacion?
Application.
Application. What gets in the way is that there is a leader. Mm-hmm. There is a person that they worship. There is an outer symbol to their I am movement. Saint Germain. There is an outer symbol to their movement, whoever the various people are that lead in these I am movements, and I don't want to start naming a lot of them, but they have this outer symbolization, this outer touch, instead of the inner. And their whole movement is based upon the inner, I am. But if you say I am in a group of metaphysicians, they'll say, oh, what area of the I am movement are you talking about? I am movement! It's not I am me, but I am movement. And you see, this is the thing. We lose so much. What happened with Christianity? Where did Christ go? You know?
Outside.
Outside, that's right. Now, what happened with Buddhism? Buddha did not teach anything. Everything we have about the Buddha was written by the Brahmins and brought into, because the people loved the Buddha because he was so simple. They said he had the innerfold path, the outerfold path. He didn't have any of those things. Those things were all additions put onto him by the Brahmins who adopted him and took him in because that way they could get a large population going along with him. And this is true. Now, this is why so many people follow Christianity, because it's a ready-made sprick word that people accept, and they can be accepted. Now, why do people want to become why do people want to become Islamic? Why do they want to be Islamic? Because when they're living in Islamic countries, it's more comfortable to be in Islam than it is anything else. You're not fighting anything. You're not going against the grain of anything. You're just flowing with it. Now, can you be yourself in a strange religion that is strange to you? Yes. You can be yourself if you pay no attention to it. The thing is, you're always going to have to be yourself wherever you are. And if you are touched by the outer in any way, even by the religion that you are, so to speak, in, then you're in trouble. If you believe the Christianity that's taught in the Bible and that's taught by the churches, you're in trouble. And why are you in trouble? Because that Christianity teaches we are better than anybody else, and we are the only religion, and we are the only way to God. Like saying, before Jesus Christ came, nobody had a chance to understand their divinity. Nobody had a chance to understand what all was about, you know. And that's not fair to say. That's very cruel. Because that's like saying, from the time that man first came on earth until Jesus came along, well, what the hell did Jesus wait so long for? Why didn't he come along 10 minutes after the first man came along, you know? But, you see, that's not fair. That's not. And as they said in Tuck, the movie last night, they said, it's not fair. Yes, it's not fair. But it's fair if you can get away with it, you know? If you can con people into believing that everything you say is right, good. Paul did this as he went through his teachings. He didn't know Jesus. He didn't know the teachings of Jesus. Jesus had no teachings. You know, Jesus had the Sermon on the Mount and a few other goodies, but no teachings. And so Paul didn't even know those. And he went off to these other countries, and he taught what he heard from within himself about his own spiritual illumination, and that became a segment of Christianity, which was totally not Christ at all. And then he said Jesus spoke to him, and so they put those words in red in the Bible, so that you'll think that Jesus actually spoke to Paul, and that but Paul said Jesus spoke to him, and so people take it that Paul was honest and true and really heard him. Well, now, Jesus may have spoken to Paul as Paul. God speaks to us as God, as us. The divine in you speaks to you all the time. It is your divinity. Now, are you ready for that? You know, think about it. That's interesting. Okay. That's being unconditional love complete. Being unconditional love complete. Being unconditional love complete. Interesting. Okay. Being unconditional love complete. What does that mean? Anybody tell me? We both know. Agelessness is spiritually whole. Being is a sense of allness. Being in the awareness of now. Being unconditional love complete. So, if we are being unconditional love, we are being unconditional love complete. We can only be totality, the totality of unconditional love. That's all we know how to do. That's all we know how to think and be. There's no other beingness in us except the unconditional love. Now, what is unconditional love? What is unconditional love? Unconditional love is love given out freely without any expectations of something back, or without any feeling of goodness for doing it. I see, that's the sense. You don't feel good in loving. Oh, I'm so good, you know. You love because it's your nature. You love everything because it's your nature. If you see a rattlesnake caught in a fence, your first thing is to free it, if you are unconditional love. If you are not unconditional love, then you are afraid of the rattlesnake. My dog, little Whiskers, much like Button here, but a mixed terrier, black like Button. We had her for 5 or 6 years, and then we had her on a Well, no, she was not a chain. We had her in our front yard. There's a fenced front yard, about 6 feet tall fence. And so when we were away from home, she had to run to the yard and could do whatever she wanted to. Well, I came home from work or something. Yeah, it must have been work, because, I mean, that's what I did that day. I didn't go to school. I came home from work, and people were looking at my front gate. And I looked over there, and here Whiskers was hanging by her choke collar from one of the pieces of wood on the gate, you know, and just hanging there, you know, and kicking her leg. She had a strong neck, happily, but everybody was afraid to touch her because they didn't want to get bit. Well, it's understandable. So I went over there, and I said, "Whiskers, relax." And Whiskers relaxed, and I picked her up off the fence, set her down, and zoom, out she went into the road, right underneath the wheels of different cars, and trying to do something. She was chasing something, you know. And then, 20 minutes later, she came back. But zoom, right underneath all the wheels of those cars. And I thought, oh, my goodness sake, this dog is a charmed dog. And it's a wonderful dog. But, you see, unconditional love said to me, that's my dog, that's my baby, you know. I have to go there and do something immediately. And so then I said to her, peace, relax now, be peace. And Whiskers understood me, and she was peace. And I picked her up, and I set her down, and she had a mission. And she went after that mission, whatever it was. I never did find out. Then, of course, she didn't tell me either. But you see, this is how unconditional love works. Now, I gave you one illustration. And I'm sure that you can come up with many, many more illustrations of how you have seen, heard, or done unconditional love yourself. Because unconditional love is a wonderful thing, I tell you. It's a wonderful thing. I'm always tempted to tell incidents in my life about unconditional love and stuff like that, but it makes me look too good, and I don't want to do that, because I don't need to do that. But we can all think of incidents where we did. And of course, this is not so much unconditional love as it was humorous. I was taking pictures at that fire, remember? And I went around the back of the building, and there was this woman up there with her kid, and looking out the window, save my baby, save my baby! And I had my speed graphic camera in one hand and stuff, and she threw the baby at me out the window. Well, I grabbed the baby and held it, and I continued taking pictures and went around the front of the house and gave the baby to a fireman, and they went back to taking pictures. You know, a dedicated journalist, you know, a photographer. And I did it, but I never told anybody that I did this until many years later, and I never said anything because I wasn't. It was just what you do. You know, it's just what you do. And was that unconditional love? Well, yes, because it was bothering me taking my pictures, you know. And I did go around and say, hey, she needs a net in the back of the house. And so they went around the back of the house with their net, and she jumped into it. And then, where's my baby? Where's my baby? You know, and up front, you know, the fireman has it. But, you see, these are the things. These are the things. When we can remember that and live that and be that unconditional love and be that flow and that happiness, it's exciting. It's exciting. Yeah. How many people have you saved from drowning? How many people have you saved from nonsense in life, you know? Probably more than you want to admit. But why do you create yourself in a situation where you save people? You know, that's interesting too. And my life work in journalism brought me into a lot of experiences, and so therefore I was there and involved in it, but not involved in it to the point where I felt good about it, that is, you know, proud of myself. It was just something you do and something that was done, and it's wonderful. Well, we're going to go on to our lecture 23, Agelessness is Divine Order, and we'll move on to that in, say, 10 minutes, at 20 minutes to 4, okay? So take a pause and relax and be happy and know that I love you.
You said 20 minutes or 10 minutes before?